Daniel chapter 3, beginning in verse number 1. King Nebuchadnezzar made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth 6 cubits. He set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent together the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, the magistrates, and all the officials of the provinces gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you are to fall down and worship the golden image that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. And whoever does not fall down in worship shall immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace." Therefore, as soon as all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all the peoples, nations, and languages fell down and worshipped the golden image that the king Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Verse number 8. Therefore, at that time, certain Chaldeans came forward and maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into a burning fiery furnace. There are certain Jews whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Verse 13, "Then Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, 'Is it true, O Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music to fall down and worship the image that I have made, well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast into a burning, fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands?'" Verse 16, "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, 'O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, O king, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up.' Then Nebuchadnezzar," verse 19, "was filled with fury, and the expression of his face changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times more than it was usually heated. And he ordered some of the mighty men of his army to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and to cast them into the burning, fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, their hats, and their other garments, and they were thrown into the burning, fiery furnace. But because the king's order was urgent and the furnace overheated, the flame of the fire killed those men who took Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego up. And these 3 men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the burning, fiery furnace." Verse 24, "Then Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to his counselors, 'Did we not cast 3 men bound into the fire?' They answered and said to the king, 'King, true, O king.' He answered and said, 'But I see 4 men unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt, and the appearance of the fourth is like a son of the gods.'" Verse 26, "Then Nebuchadnezzar came near to the door of the burning fiery furnace, and he declared, 'Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out and come here.' Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out from the fire. And the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of those men. The hair of their heads was not singed, their cloaks were not harmed, and no smell of fire had come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and delivered his servants, who trusted in him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve and worship any god except their own. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be torn limb from limb and their houses laid in ruins, for there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. Wow. What an account. What a story. This account with Nebuchadnezzar's statue, plus his pride and his arrogance, plus this quiet but powerful rebellion of this religious minority, plus Nebuchadnezzar's rage, plus this miraculous deliverance, all of these things pull together to create high drama in this passage. There are at least three areas where this text wants to teach us a lesson. So number one, and there are notes there in your bulletin for following along. Number one, true versus false worship. True versus false worship. This chapter is obviously about worship. It is about the one true God versus the hubris of Nebuchadnezzar and the power or lack thereof of his gods. He sets it up at the end of verse number 15, the very end of verse number 15. Who is the God who will deliver you out of my hands? He sets up the competition. And then Nebuchadnezzar, and then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they wrap up their statement in verse number 18. But if not, in other words, if God doesn't deliver them, let it be known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods, plural, or worship the golden image that you have set up. This is obviously about worship, who will and who will not bow down. And so Nebuchadnezzar has all the power. He's got the counselors, the advisors, the wealth, the victory. And this time he even has a band, right? Horns, bagpipes, trigons, harps, on and on it goes. He's got a band. He's got power. He's got wealth. He has gold. But his soul is empty. And his worship is false. So I want to point out three or four things, kind of do an expose of false worship so that we can avoid it and we can recognize it. First of all, false worship always comes from a rebellious heart. Essentially, if you think of this in context, Daniel has been given a vision in chapter 2 of an image, right? But was this image all gold? No, the head was gold, and then there was silver, and then there was bronze, and then there was iron, and then there was clay mixed with the iron. And it symbolized that Babylon and Nebuchadnezzar were going to be replaced, right? We talked about that last week with the Medo-Persian, the Greek, and then the Roman empires. And essentially, this golden image that is gold from head to foot, that is his expression of rebellion against God's vision. He does not want to see himself and his kingdom replaced with these other kingdoms. It reveals his rebellion against God. It is his way of saying, no, we're going to try to last forever. I'm going to do whatever I can to last forever. Partly he does this with the image. That's symbolic. But he also consolidates the leadership of all of the provinces that he has conquered. And he was a very victorious general. All of these provinces have to come and they have to basically swear allegiance by falling down to his golden image. And if not, they're going to be burned alive. And apparently, he's got the thing cooking already. You repeated it twice. You will immediately be cast into a burning fiery furnace. Some scholars think that this was the brick kiln that prepared the bricks for the various trappings around this golden image. There would have been masonry. Perhaps even it was masonry that was gilded in gold. But nevertheless, they would have made bricks for the platform and all of those other things. And so there it is, cooking. And instead of cooking bricks, it was going to cook people if they didn't fall down in worship. Also, false worship is always about ourselves. We don't know what this vision looked like, but he was requiring that you fall down to the image that I have set up. Did you notice how many times that was repeated? The image that Nebuchadnezzar set up. The image that I have set up. This was all about him. The image may have even appeared to look like him somewhat. It was his way of acquiring the allegiance of these people, and it was his way of exalting himself. Historians have brought to our attention that prior to this, in the year 594, he had to put down a rebellion in Babylon itself, and fairly close to that, he had to travel into some of his western provinces to collect the tribute that was being withheld by some of his vassal princes. So he's having trouble. He doesn't want to see this dream fulfilled, but he can see it being fulfilled. And so he does all of this to exalt himself. False worship is about ourselves. But also, false worship destroys us. False worship destroys us. There is something rabid about Nebuchadnezzar in his response to the fact that they refuse to worship him. Can you imagine being so taken up by your own self-exaltation that you will burn people alive? This guy's nuts, right? Look at verse 13 again. Nebuchadnezzar, in furious rage, commanded that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be brought. Look at verse number 19. Nebuchadnezzar was filled with rage, and the expression, by the way, that's the word image. He set up an image, and his rage distorts his image. The image of his face was changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He's more like an animal. This portrays him as a rabid dog, almost. But then also, this false worship distorts the humanity of everyone who falls down. Did you notice this list? You know, I had to take this long, deep breath to do it. The satraps, prefects, governors, counselors, treasurers, justices, magistrates, and all the officials. It's repeated twice, and it's done on purpose. It's done on purpose. It's to make fun of them, basically. They are like animatrons, just doing what they are told, right? That's the reason that it's in the text. Do you remember when we preached on chapter 1 and I told you that Daniel intentionally misspells Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and Belteshazzar, his Babylonian name? He intentionally misspelled them as a quiet rebellion. This is the similar kind of thing. He's laughing through his hat at these automatic bowers before the image. Because they're not thinking, they're not considering, they're not thinking about their own tradition. They were idolaters too, but they weren't loyal to their home idol. They just fell down before Nebuchadnezzar's idol so that they could save their neck and save their job and advance their career. So all of them, Nebuchadnezzar, he's like a rabid dog. These guys are like Pavlov's dogs, right? They just salivate when they hear the bell. They do what they are told. It destroys their humanity. And this is so true for us. Are we tempted to this self-exaltation? Are we tempted to this pride? Are we tempted to this self-worship? Well, yes, in many ways we are. But we need to understand that that reflects a rebellious heart. And yes, even for us, that destroys something of the image of God in us. It destroys something about our true humanity when we worship something besides the one true God. We might think of it in terms of anger. What is it that causes us to be angry? Typically, it's our selfishness. And that anger twists us into something we weren't intended to be. But these three Hebrew men could not forget the Ten Commandments. They could not forget the second commandment. You shall not make for yourselves any carved image. This is Exodus 20, verse 5. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. You shall not bow down to them or serve them. In other words, no faking it, right? No, well, I'm bowing down on the outside, but on the inside I'm rebelling. You shall not bow down to them. It's forbidden even to pretend worship to a false god. And there is power in this committed, true worship of these three Hebrew men. It gave them a quiet boldness. They didn't, by the way, draw attention to their religious purity. They didn't do that. They didn't say, hey, everybody, notice that we're not bowing down. They did not draw attention to their religious purity. They simply stood up when everybody else bowed down. They were faithful, but they didn't blow their own horn. And that it was a quiet boldness that was given to them because they were committed to only worshiping God. It also prepared them for both life and death. I'm not going to read all of verses 16 through 18 again, but those are the powerhouse of this chapter. Let it be known to you, O king, we will not bow down. No matter what, even if the what is death, we will not bow down. They were faithful and true. It prepared them for both life and death. It gave them an enduring faithfulness, this true worship, this commitment to only worshiping the one true God, helped them see the emptiness of the idolatry of the world around them, and it led them to victory, didn't it? Whether they would have died in the flames, they would have entered into the eternal victory of God, or whether God saved them, they entered into and participated in the victory of God Himself. So true and false worship are highlighted for us here in Daniel chapter 3. Number two, we see God's presence and power in our trials and in our persecutions. Man, wouldn't you like to know who the fourth person was in that burning fiery furnace? For centuries, there has been discussion and debate on whether or not that is a pre-incarnate manifestation of the Son of God. And honestly, the New Testament does not comment on this passage. And this passage itself doesn't really give us enough information to make a clear decision on that. Nebuchadnezzar, who isn't necessarily a reliable witness, right, in his pride, arrogance, anger, and hatred, but nevertheless, he calls this being, this fourth one, two different things. One who is as a son of the gods, and he also calls this fourth being an angel. But no matter the identity, whether a pre-incarnate manifestation of the Son of God, whether another form of a theophany, a manifestation of God's presence Himself, or whether it is an angel, the lesson is the same. God will be with us in our own fiery trials. There were times in the Old Testament when, and perhaps I won't read these, but perhaps I will mention Deuteronomy chapter 4. In Deuteronomy chapter 4, the persecution of Israelites in Egypt was compared to a furnace. And so here these exiles are in a furnace of exile, and they're reading this story, and they're saying, oh my goodness, If God can be with those three exiles in their literal furnace, He will be with us in our exile furnace, our metaphorical furnace. God is going to be with us. He is going to send His presence and His power. It was like this, and maybe if you know a little bit about history, you can relate to this. This story in the text of the Bible for suffering Israelites and for suffering Christians should be like the radio waves that carried in World War II Voice of America. That was kind of this underground, rebellious, we did it officially, but it was our way of undermining Nazism and Hitler in the hearts of those who could listen to it. And all of the resistance in Germany and throughout Europe, they wanted to hear the Voice of America radio broadcast because it gave them good news, reliable news, and it encouraged them that somebody outside of Europe cared and was helping. And so this is like, you know, God beaming in a radio program to our hearts when we suffer and said, I will be with you. It may feel like you're in the fiery furnace, but I will be there with you. Peter, a good Israelite, wrote these words in 1 Peter chapter 4. You can give this one to us on the screen, Josiah, please. 1 Peter chapter 4. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you. And then he ends that text with, the Spirit of glory and of God rest upon you. God is with us when we are in a fiery trial. And then Nebuchadnezzar gives us a warning. He warns us, number three, against shallow conviction and hardened hearts. A lot of this story is really told through his eyes, but there is a dark side to him. This rage, this anger, and he never really changes. He keeps getting impressed by God, the Most High God. He can deliver from my burning fiery furnace. He was impressed with the Most High God in chapter 2. But his heart never changes. He has shallow conviction, but his heart remains hard. It's like this. Many people come to a spiritual storm or a circumstantial storm in their life, and they run to God because He's a roof over their head, protecting them from the lightning, protecting them from the pelting rain, maybe the hail, maybe the snowstorm, right? They find God to be a temporary shelter in a storm, but they leave that shelter after the storm goes away, and they go through their life with business as usual. I've sometimes referred to this as a spiritual hiccup as opposed to heart surgery. Nebuchadnezzar kept having spiritual hiccups, but never a heart change. We need to examine our own hearts, and we need to acknowledge that sometimes people around us will show an interest in the Lord during the storm, but what we need to call them to is genuine heart surgery. So this passage calls us away from our self-exaltation, and it warns us against shallow conviction. But most of all, this passage tells us that God will be with us when we suffer for Him. He will be with us. He will be that fourth person in our fiery trial. Would you bow your heads with me, please? Oh, dear Heavenly Father, we do acknowledge how very much we need the message of this truth. Oh, God, forgive us when we exalt ourselves, when we tend to worship ourselves. Forgive us, I pray. Help us, Lord, to have this quiet boldness that true worship brings. Help us to be prepared for both life and death. Help us, Lord, by your grace, to be absolutely and totally committed to pure and true worship. At the same time, Lord, thank you for the encouragement. Just as you were with, your presence was with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, you are with us when we face our fiery trials. We thank you for it, Lord, in Jesus' name. Amen.